So I'm start. I'll start with a Twitter question while you think, and then just raise your hand, and the mics will go around like we did earlier. By the way, you guys watched Jim Hogg's video. He did the video on the compiler optimizations that you saw in right after Jesse. So and before Rahul. So that's just so you guys know who to ask. And so the first question is there a difference in terms of performance between WRL and C++ CX?
In C++ CX, exceptions is required. In WRL, if your rest of your code doesn't use exceptions, you don't need to turn on exception handling. And one of the things that happens with exceptions, once you turn on exceptions, is the compiler, the optimizations that the compiler can do sometimes, it cannot do certain optimizations, but that's really the key difference. If you end up using, let's say, STL in your WRL code, and you obviously need to catch some of those exceptions, you start putting try, catch to handle those exceptions and return errors, I would not see any noticeable difference in performance between C++ CX and WRL. The other interesting thing is, in C++ CX, as Herb was mentioning earlier, because we have the hat syntax, we can do optimizations where if you try to pass a hat to a function, we know, okay, it is an input parameter, we don't need to do addref release. But if you just take a comp PTR and just pass it by value, there would be addref and release. You have to do the work to make sure some of these things are correct, so you pass it by const reference and things like that. So I don't think we have seen any noticeable differences between both of them, WRL or C++ CX. Jim, you want to say anything about exceptions? Or?
No.
No.
Raise your hand if you have a question. Otherwise, I can read some from the Twitter stream. But make sure you raise your hand so you get a mic, because I don't see any hands up right now. So the next one, I don't think we have all the right experts, so it's kind of a tricky one. Are there any plans for serial port APIs on WinRT? We can't speculate on what's coming later, and most of these people are C++, so the short answer is we don't have them today, as the person already knew, and, we just don't have, we can't speculate on what's coming, even on the release preview or later. So I don't know. I don't have a great answer for that one. If somebody on Twitter wants to ask me offline, just ping me offline. Whoever asked that one, it's at Jaime Rodriguez, and we'll get you a better answer. Go ahead.
I was interested about the vectorization. The examples use sine and cosine.
The vectorization examples use sine and cosine, and are those native built into the processor?
In fact, we have a library that does vectorization of the math functions. So all the math functions in math.h, they run on the processor, but you need to have vector versions that do 4 at a time.
Is this on? Okay. I was wondering about the DirectX and XAML interop story. Is it possible to have like your menu in the game be completely XAML based and then like switch into a level that's completely DirectX based? Can you switch modes altogether, or do you have to stay with a swap chain background panel permanently if you choose to use that?
So if you're using a swap chain background panel to display a game in the swap chain, you do have to stick with that model. However, what you can do is actually add and remove XAML children as you need to, and we'll actually take them entirely out of the presentation layer if you take them out of the child collection of the swap chain background panel. So if you're just presenting in a swap chain background panel, it doesn't mean you necessarily have to have XAML UI there. You can just have your game displaying in the swap chain background panel. It's fully DirectX, and then you can basically add the XAML menu when you want to see it and then remove it again when you don't, and we'll optimize it away so we're not causing any extra overdraw or anything like that.
So in the menu, would you just not present your XAML or your DirectX anymore, and then it'll be just optimized so that just XAML shows up?
You can do that.
Okay.
So we've also experimented, I'm not sure how well this works in current builds, with the ability to create multiple framework views effectively within an application. This is analogous more to the screen model, the game screen model that was in XNA. is you could have a view that's entirely DX-based and a view that's entirely XAML-based. So if you're switching to your menu screen and it's a complete screen swap, then that's effectively what you get. But there are some restrictions, like you have to have each of those screens implemented as separate DLLs in the project, in the same solution, but they have to be separate DLLs.
Does that work with Lib8?
Yes, that's for Metro.
Right, so we have one from the Twitter stream, and it says, can I mix UI event and background task with C++ task then? Kind of stuff, so.
So the question, it's interesting. I don't fully understand the question. So I'm assuming you mean the XAML UI event handler, and you want to create a continuation off of that. I can't think of a first-class way to do that, but even if you could, it sounds like the then will get scheduled back on the UI thread, so I'm not really sure that you want to do that. Do you have something more to add?
I don't fully understand the UI event question, but you can certainly schedule background tasks with PPL tasks. The default for a task is to run in the background if it doesn't wrap an async operation. I'm assuming in an event handler, you can create a task and schedule continuations off of that task, or you can set a task completion event, which will then queue off its continuations. But I'm not sure that you can actually convert a UI event handler to a task like you can do with an async operation completed handler.
Any questions in the room?
There's another tweet coming from one of your old friends.
Okay. Could you please elaborate on debug and profiling experience for Visual C++ 11, auto-parallelization, auto-vectorization, and C++ AMP? Wow.
So I'll answer on behalf of the AMP team. You get pretty good debugging and profiling experience. So if you've used PPL, the parallel debugger and the parallel profiler, you'll get similar expectations. You'll actually see the same similar interfaces and similar debugging experiences. It's first-class task-based debugging and profiling. I'll let Jim answer about auto-parallelization and vectorization.
So for auto-parallelization, auto-vectorization, these only actually kick in if you are doing an optimized build. In other words, normally in the Visual Studio IDE, that would be a release build. Or on the command line, that would be a /O2, you know, optimized for speed. So the debugging experience with optimized code is it's for the brave. There's not much help in the Visual Studio IDE for this release on telling you, for example, which variables have been registered, what their lifetimes are. You need to figure that out as you go. On the other hand, since there are no bugs in that particular part of the software, you're okay.
Oh, Jan is right there.
Any question? We're giving things away, right? So ask a question and you might get something.
For some of the asynchronous APIs, particularly file I/O, have you what do you do on the back end to prevent a degradation in performance from too many parallel reads or similar issues?
That's a great question. So all of them run on the thread pool. So the actual code async operations, like the file I/O stuff, that runs on the thread pool. The PPL continuations and tasks, all of them run on concert. So there's a check there that it does not oversubscribe too much because you're already using thread pools. It will not just go and create, like, if you create 200 async operations, it's not going to go create 200 threads for you. So it's going to try to load balance based on the CPU that you have and the responsiveness you're expecting. So, and as a follow-up of that, there's another question here on Twitter from Kevin. If you're using different parallel APIs indirectly, will they compete? And the answer is the same. So they all, like, whether it's parallel far, data flow, PPL tasks, all of them will compose, and you know, all of them are built on concert, including std async, std future. All of that is built on top of concert, so they'll compose perfectly well, and they won't compete for the resources. There will be one area of competition, which is if you're using OpenMP, which uses a different runtime, and Concert, so you'll have two runtimes. But all our experiments show that even if you subscribe about 4x, 5x, in general, you'll be fine as long as you're not cache sensitive. In general, it should be fine. So, but if you're using the recommended C++ PPL for all your parallelism needs, then you actually will not have any competition. So the underlying Concert will take care of everything for you. Did that answer your question, though? Oh, the hard drive. Okay.
Yeah. Certain resources don't handle
well. I don't know the implementation of the file I/O and whether they do the throttling in there. That's a great question. I do know that if you use raw threads and try to do that, the degradation is pretty imminent within like 8 threads or so. But I don't know the behavior for the async. I can follow up with you on this one. So. Feel free to send me a mail, rahul.patel@microsoft.com. I'll definitely get back to you on this one.
Just a follow-up question, but if you use TBB, Intel's TBB, yeah, that will work with Concert, right?
So I don't know the TBB story on whether TBB is available for Metro or not. So on the desktop, just to give some context, so TBB is thread-building blocks from Intel. And PPL and TBB, we worked very closely together when we came up with the PPL layer. And for Windows 7 desktop and Windows 8 desktop, the TBB layer uses the Concert's resource manager, so we compose pretty well. Now, I think the question here is specific to Metro. Will TBB compose well with Threadpool or Concert? So I don't know if Intel's releasing a thread building blocks that is
For Metro. I think that was kind of a bad question.
Okay. I don't know if they're releasing, but on the desktop it should work fine. I do believe you need to set up a flag though, some registry somewhere, that forces the composition between the two. The default does not, but there's a registry that you can set that will do that for you.
So can I ask one further question, because you're going to hit it on Twitter if I don't? Was if I have a dot then chain, so if I do the first one, I want to get it off the current thread, so I let you pick the next thread, but then I want all the following operations to remain on the same core, right, if I have a lot of data and I'm worried about cache effects. So if I let you pick the core for the first then and then keep them all on the current, is that the current as in the launch where our I originate the thread, or the current as in where it was in the last dot then, in the last part of the chain.
Do you want to take this one? Yeah.
So when you say use current, it usually applies to the current environment, which is always the current thread. So if you say dot then use arbitrary and dot then use current, it doesn't inherit the context from the previous one. But when you talk about cores and stuff, so if you said use arbitrary, we pretty much pick any thread in the concurrency runtime, and it's not possible, at least at this stage, for you to programmatically tell us run all these continuations on the same core. It's likely that any core will pick them up. But most likely what happens is that if a thread is already running and something has been queued, it's most likely to pick up the next thing if everybody else is silent. So you may get that, but we don't guarantee it.
Okay, so if we're doing a lot of processing that's very, very sensitive to cache and NUMA effects, right? Is there any way to let you do that scheduling, or would we really need to do that scheduling ourselves?
You can actually use some APIs that we have that are, for instance, if you do a loop within a loop type of thing, we have some affinity partitioners that help with that. If you have your machine which has say 5 NUMA nodes, you can use some of our lower level APIs to create schedulers around a NUMA node each and schedule work to those. But that's not available in Metro though. That's only desktop. Oh. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Next question.
Can I create native WinRT classes that are inheritable that I can subclass in .NET or vice versa?
Let me think about it. I think the latest is no. No. I because there's some discussion going on, I don't remember what the latest thing is. I'm sure you'll come to know once we release. I'm not up to date on what the latest decision was there. I think right now it's no. You cannot write I think the only way you can write it is through WRL. I don't think any of the high-level languages projections allow you to do that.
I tried the CX syntax recently, recent syntax, and still required sealed.
Yes.
I've never tried it on WRL. As you could tell, it's a little harder.
So, I mean, just to be clear, the WRL does not provide anything for you to author those, but it's possible that you can write your own infrastructure to do that. WRL doesn't provide anything built in to let you create base classes that can be inherited.
I'm not sure we can answer the next question, but I think we could try. It says, are the built-in apps, example, Mail and Calendar, written in C++ or some other technology? Jesse, do you know?
I think
Windows is native, so they are.
I don't know.
But these are Metro-style apps. Yeah. They're talking about the Metro-style apps here.
I know that some of the apps, the only way I know some of them are written with C++ is because they ask us questions. Hey, I'm trying to do X. How do I do it? So I know there are some apps. I don't know exactly which ones.
I can tell you this because Jesse did. So Bing Maps obviously used Scylla today, and that's using the Bing control, which is DirectX. So I know that one was the other one that I happen to know because it's also native out of the box. The Reader. Mm-hmm. Also uses the SAML and C++ and the DirectX because we were going to demo those today. We ran out of time to show you everything. I don't know if there's any other ones that we know of.
I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure exactly which ones are which, but I know there are some of each type, I think. I think there's some that are JavaScript, some that are C++.
Yep. That's what we have, right? You choose your stack, choose your skills. There's, C++ is what we're preaching today, and we definitely show you a lot of things that you can only do in C++. But, you shouldn't write everything in C++ just because, there's other things that you could do. If HTML or SAML does a trick and you want to use C# or, JavaScript, all of that works, right? That's the beauty of Metro. That's the beauty of WinRT.
But C++ is better.
Charles is a fan.
In the PPL, are there any classes for managing concurrency? If we kick off a chain of operations so that we don't have to just block a thread waiting on a lock?
Can I
kick off a task, do then, sort of a chainable wait,
yeah,
and then a then, so that rather than having a then handler, which is just going to hold a thread in the thread pool waiting for some other thread to finish its work?
Actually, the then handler will not have a thread that's held in the thread pool. So the then is only scheduled when it's ready to run.
Right, but if I have a concurrent chain running that's going to use the same resources, somewhere in those two chains, I'm going to have to interlock.
Oh, you want to exchange?
I don't want to have to use a mutex, because if I have to use a mutex, then one of those threads, one of those task handlers, is going to be running on a thread, right, blocked, waiting for the mutex while another one is going. I'd rather not have to stop a thread waiting for another thread to finish its work. With the task chain model, once thread B was done with its work and gave up the lock, that could signal continuation of task chain A.
You could set up something called task completion event that can signal that.
You're using concurrency aware locks.
Awesome.
So they're continuing. Do you want to take it?
Well, it depends. I mean, are you using concurrency aware locks, for instance, the STD mutex, which knows about the concurrency runtime?
No.
So you're using Windows?
That's very intriguing, though.
I think he doesn't want to use mutex.
Can you describe the problem again? You don't want to use a mutex, but...
I'm fine using a mutex. I just don't like holding threads on a lock for arbitrary long periods of time while something else is doing work.
I see.
A model where everything is done asynchronously, except for the synchronization between chains of tasks.
I see.
That should not be synchronous, ideally.
Yeah, I don't think we have support for that kind of stuff, where you can give up the thread while you're blocked. Is that what you're considering?
Pretty much.
Yeah, we definitely don't have support for that.
But can't you do a join? I mean, if there are two chains of tasks, you can do a join and run the final task.
But if an individual chain blocks, it's still going to hold on to its thread.
I can't do the join unless I'm setting both those tasks up and the chains up at the same time. I'm thinking of the case where I press a button in my UI, which kicks off some actions, then the user hits it again, then again, then again, then again, right? If they all need to go access the same file, I need to lock before I go open the write to the file, read file, write file, and then unlock. and let the next change continue. Task completion events may be a good way to build a concurrency model around that.
Yeah, the closest you have is task completion events. You don't need to have the structure up front for the VENOL, but you know, that's a little bit more advanced. But yeah, there's absolutely no way to give up a thread once you've blocked. So yeah, not yet at least.
Are there any memory, I'm not sure we can answer this, but are there any memory leak tools that work with Metro C++ apps? I'm not having luck with CRT dump memory leaks.
All of the ones that work on desktop should work. I mean, a CRT memory dump, CRT dump memory leak should work. If it's not, I think we can figure that out through what are our channels of.
Yeah, the problem that we've had with that particular scenario is that a lot of these leak detection tools really kick in when the application is terminated. And right now with the PLM present, the process of termination is different depending on what the circumstances are, whether you've been suspended or not and so on. And so the recommendation that we have is that if you want to detect leaks, that you not just wait for your app to terminate, that you put some kind of explicit command in there during the debug builds that you can use to fire a bunch of events that close windows and terminate the application, so that all of these leak detection tools that are out there today will definitely get the message and start checking their heaps. You know, otherwise it can be pretty problematic to tell exactly when these tools should kick in.
So Chaz, I think in recent, I don't know if the beta consumer preview has this, but I think I thought in recent builds in the debugger, there's some way to terminate. Yeah, I don't know if that helps.
Alt F4 still works, and okay, then you can do the drag down from the top to the bottom. It's just that depending on, for example, the type of event loop you're running, if you're doing a process until quit, versus, which is blocking on every call, or if you're doing the kind that we have that just kind of continues to iterate, you get different orders of operations of the shutdown process that many of these loggers don't deal with currently.
Hello. Is there a way to know the number of real cores versus hyper-threaded cores, or any way to know the performance of the system?
On Metro?
Yes.
On Metro, no. On desktop, obviously, there's a get system info that you can know. On Metro, no. That's been specifically disabled because we don't want people to be thinking in terms of threads and cores. We want people to be thinking in terms of tasks.
Okay. Yeah. But how about, you're making a high-performance application like a game. Is there any way to know? One of the slides actually said that there's something you could query to know something about the system, but there was no specifics given.
I don't think I put that slide. So was it that in the DirectX?
During the DirectX.
Jesse, do you remember? Chaz.
Okay.
I think DirectX level, right? I think that's what you had.
You can identify the sort of feature level of the graphics card, but the number of cores on the CPU is opaque currently. And the assumption, I guess, is that the thread pool will manage whichever ones you've got as best as it can, and that you shouldn't really have to worry about that, although, you know, we're still interested in collecting specific scenarios for which that is not true, if you can find any.
I think to follow up on that, one of the philosophies from the scheduler perspective is we want the scheduler to have the best information to make the best scheduling decision. So what we had discovered was when people use these specific APIs and try to optimize for specific hyper-threaded scenarios and so on, the average experience starts deteriorating. So that's one of the reasons it was made opaque. And with the idea that the scheduler has the best information on where to schedule what threads. So that should get better over time. That will only get better over time because there's nobody else telling the scheduler to do it any other way. So that was one of the philosophies.
Jim.
Go ahead.
Jim, this is your question.
Okay, there's another question on the screen here. How sophisticated is the scheduler for auto-parallelization? And what about loops with bigger data where NUMA might be an issue? So parallelization comes in kind of two versions. One is the auto-parallelization, which you need to enable by clicking a button in the Visual Studio IDE. And the other is explicit, using PPL parallel for. Underneath, we've got a choice of two runtimes. For auto-parallelization, today in this first release, we use OpenMP. For PPL, it uses the concert runtime. So at the moment, they use different mechanisms beneath. We're looking at maybe rationalizing that to focus on just the one in future releases.
Yeah, so the slight difference in the choice of the runtimes essentially is that when you look at the auto-parallel loops, what it's really, really good at is very, very, very small loops, or not very small loops, but very code that can be analyzed to be thread safe, right? And we noticed that that needs to be highly performant because the overhead can be a lot if you try to parallelize it. And there are ways you can do this in OpenMP, screaming fast for really small loops. So given that it's V1, and given that we want to get good feedback on this one to know whether this is worth parallelizing or not, we've right now the choice is OpenMP. We've experimented with both concert and OpenMP. And the other part of the question was NUMA, how much have you tested? We've tested up to 48 cores, multiple sockets, and all of that stuff for both concert and OpenMP. And I think they're coming in close right now, and next release we'll see if the auto-parallelization should also be put on top of concert.
I want to answer the question. Next one. So it's a hard question. How should I convince my boss to choose C++ instead of HTML5?
I mean, with Metro, you do get the option of having hybrid apps, right? If there are, you're not now limited to saying, oh, I'm using C++, the whole app has to be C++. I mean, the simple scenario, as you saw with Harry's presentation, there was serious amount of code, performance-sensitive code in C++, and the UI was HTML. I mean, it comes down to which parts of the system do you want to write in which language. It's not necessarily, oh, if I write now in C++, I'm blocked from using HTML, or if I'm using JavaScript, I'm blocked from using C++, is no longer the case. I mean, it's also the same thing with C# and VB. So I think it's best to choose what works for your application. And I don't think any of us can answer this is the best thing for you to use, because your UI may be, I mean, UI typically is not, people don't just keep clicking on things. There's a lag, and it may not matter. But if you're writing a game, of course, I think C++ definitely becomes very important in that.
Sure, yeah. Again, just to reiterate, it really depends on the requirements of your app and what you're trying to do. So if you have a lot of UI, maybe you're trying to reuse HTML across a web presence as well. In that case, you might have a lot of UI assets that you would want to just keep consistent between the two. Or maybe you have a rendering engine in C++, again, that's cross-platform, then you'd want to keep your C++ code there. So it depends on your app, and you really want to look at the requirements of what you're trying to do. And you have the option of mixing them if that's a better solution as well.
Last thing I would say on the HTML world is that, remember, we are very hardware accelerated on HTML2, right? The Triton engine is very, very fast. So don't be afraid. Obviously, to me, it's exactly use what works for your app, right? Second thing is use what you know. That's why we've given you the three choices. But there's not an easy answer there. It just comes down to what your app needs.
Yeah, one thing that we've seen is that people start out a lot of times with a JavaScript environment because it's so easy to get started. But then as the number of lines of code increases, you really start wishing that you had things like type safety that you can, you know, use to scale to a larger code base with. So people are kind of migrating to some extent in that direction. Also, there's some reflection of the whole web versus app economy models where people are getting pretty nice experiences out of these applications today. And I think some of the stats are showing that people are spending more eyeball minutes in apps now than they are on web pages in some cases. So there's, you know, we're prepared for whichever way people want to go.
Just a follow-on question to that, couldn't you argue to your boss that if you wanted to build compelling UIs with XAML and DirectX. I mean, you can do things in DirectX that you can't do in HTML5, even though there's DirectX underneath the covers and, you know, hardware-accelerated graphics in IE9, and we invented. So can you answer that question? I mean, couldn't you tell his boss that? I want to build a UI that you can't build in HTML5. Yeah. I need to use DirectX.
Of course.
Yeah, there's some nice third-party UI toolkits that are written entirely in DirectX. I think there's one supported, well, it's called Scaleform. And it supports, you know, menus that rotate in arbitrary directions and, you know, transparency and some amazing effects.
Jaime, maybe we need to ask them a question, huh?
Yep.
I just wanted to add one more thing about that as well, is also consider whether or not you should do that. I mean, sure, it looks cool, but you also want to consider the Metro style guidelines we have for Windows 8. So we have those for a reason. And so you really want to have a focus on your content, not Chrome, and all those other principles of Metro style design. And so if you're using one of the built-in frameworks like XAML or HTML for your presentation layer, then you basically get that for free. So that's just another thing to consider.
Got a question, Charles? Got a question for them?
Yeah, well, so we're going to ask a question. In other words, we're going to reverse this. We're going to ask you because we want to wake you up. And if you get the question right, we'll give you an incredible gift, man. Ah, look, he already raised his hand.
What's the answer?
42.
Even better. So after this question, we'll ask our question of you, okay?
I have two questions. The original agenda, there was a writing networking code with C++. I didn't see that. So if you guys, I just wonder what's new in the Metro app, networking-wise, and where I can find more information. And second question is, if Metro-style apps running on my desktop or notebook, my laptop, versus running on the ARM, the tablet PC, is there any behavioral differences? So that's it.
So let me answer you the networking part of this session, because that's my fault. I'm going to take the blame for that one. We fell behind in the morning so far that we cut one video short. It was an online session. It was supposed to be your lunch break. It's a 30-minute already recorded session on Casablanca, which is Casablanca is kind of a library where you can that you could use to connect any kind of C++ applications to the cloud. The videos will be online. It'll be posted. You're going to get to see it. So we had to cut it short to try to catch up. At some point, we fell behind, and team had the hardware problems. So we just had to, at some point, say, okay, we're gonna keep the show going. But the video was pre-recorded, and it will be online. So you're gonna get to watch it tonight. Yep, and there's tutorials. There's already videos on Casablanca out there, and there's tutorials and all that. You had a second part to your question, and now I forgot it. ARM. Does anybody want to talk about ARM? It's harder. So I think the short answer is that if I remember your question is, hey, can I write, or if I write a Metro-style app, will it run on ARM? Right?
Or also, what's the difference between running on a laptop versus a tablet?
Okay.
I have not used all these devices, so I'm only telling from a point of view, at least from a high-level point of view, the experience of running in Metro should be similar across. That is at least our goal. And of course, one of the things to remember is if you're writing with C++, you do need to create different binaries, one for each platform. So you need to create a different binary for x86, different for x64, different for ARM. Whereas if you write with C# or JavaScript, it's the same app because they are independent of platform.
Here, hold on. Wait until we give you this.
So one example I wondered was the if application suspended. From my understanding, there is no like a background. The multitasking is going on.
Yep.
Is that true for like a both desktop and the tablet Metro?
Yeah, the application model. So if you write a Metro style app by default, the application model, the APIs, the WinRT APIs, the Metro SDK, all of that stuff is the same. So you're not going to have to code it twice. On the C++ world, you do have to recompile, but again, it's the same code and everything else. You should expect the same events from, especially you're talking about PLM, the application events are going to be the same, same API, same everything. So you don't have to code it differently. In fact, the store tells you that if you write an application and you submit one application that runs in different platforms, the functionality should be the same. So we expect that to be very similar apps. If they're totally different, then we would expect you to submit two different apps.
Right. I think my question is actually more in perspective of the operating system side, not the application side. Like operating system is scheduling. Like if application goes background, it's a desktop still behave same way like in the tablet PC.
Yeah, the scenario is identical. The same scheduler kernel is in place in both cases. I think the only thing that people might run into is that, and this is independent of processor type. So if you're on like a netbook that has 1 gig of RAM, independent of what processor it's running, you may be more likely to see some of your background apps actually terminated instead of just suspended. And then if you're on a 12 gig machine, that's less likely to happen. But as far as that goes, there's no other, that's the only difference that I'd be aware of, and that's not related to processor.
Yeah, it's really just the amount of hardware you have in the machine you're using, and so you may be suspended or terminated more aggressively if there's memory pressure on a lower-end device just because it has less memory. So functionally, it should end up the same. So if you're following the sort of lifetime management, the PLM guidelines, so you're offering up resources and so on wherever you can, then you're less likely to have your app terminated regardless of platform.
Charles, what's your question, dude?
Okay, this is easy. So, wait, no, let me ask a question. We're going to give something away, then I'll come to you for your question. This is so easy that you're going to have to be fast. Just to test whether or not you were listening earlier. So I've written a WinRT component in JavaScript, and I'm having a hard time getting it to work in C++. Why is that? Why is that? Did you catch that? Did you see the little?
Okay. The orange shirt.
Who was first?
I thought the guy was first. Yep.
You were first?
I don't know. I didn't see.
Why is it?
I'm saying because you can't make a component in JavaScript.
Okay, thanks. Man was listening.
All right, let me give you this. This is a signed piece of plastic. Very rare, man.
Signed by Herb.
Of course, that's what I mean. Herb Sutter, signed by Jaime.
Richard Hipp.
Signed by Richard Hipp. Signed by Tim Heurer. Pretty much a lot of people signed it.
All right, when you're done, come up here and I'll sign it for you. Put it on eBay.
Thanks.
Yep, go ahead.
So there's a question on Twitter. So is there a way to move things off of the current thread but pin a .then chain to a different core, something between current and arbitrary? So the way to think about the arbitrary and current is not about which core it's being scheduled on and which thread it's being scheduled on. It's something that's specific to COM and STA and MTA. So when you say, and it only works on Metro, by the way. So when you say schedule current, it schedules it on the current apartment, okay? When you say arbitrary, it sets it up on the multi-threaded apartment. And on a multi-threaded apartment, any thread is free to execute on that. So there's no, the short answer is no. No, you can't use the current and arbitrary to say where you want to schedule and which core you want to schedule. Yeah, there's no way to do that. Yeah.
Okay, so I assume this is referring to the Direct2D drawing context.
Can you read the question?
The question is, why not expose a drawing context object in WinRT if you already allow custom drawing via DirectX anyway? And maybe we just didn't think of that. Yeah, well, it's something that we'll have to consider, I guess.
It's on Twitter, so we can follow up with them.
Yeah.
If we don't have the right answer.
New one from Twitter. Wait a minute, there was a question, right? Here's a human. Here's a real person.
Well, some of these Twitter people are here.
So yeah, I just want to ask that the Windows 8 will be delivered with WAP on board, so that if I'm running a Windows 8 on a hardware which does support only till feature level 9.3 graphics APIs, I can still run all my DX11 based Metro style apps on that?
That's correct.
Okay.
Just that there might be a difference in performance,
yep,
depending on, you know, which core is faster, the CPU, okay, or the GPU.
Okay. And this WAP will be available on Windows on ARM as well?
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
So one thing I've been wondering about with the PPL tasks first data flow thing is just that. When do you do tasks? When do you use data flows? What's the thought of distinction there? Like, if you sit there and put enough tasks together, it's a data flow, right?
Yeah, great question. So there are two or three differences. So first one is data flow is a little bit more static. So you set it up once. And the key distinction is you have a stream of inputs. So take an example of a cartoonizer, so you, which has about three phases. You get a stream, you apply the first bitmap effect, second bitmap effect, and then you render the stream. That is perfect for setting up a data flow. So each phase automatically runs concurrently, but there's a partial ordering between them. And there's a very steady stream of input and steady stream of output. That's perfect for data flow. A PPL task would be a bad thing for that. Now, PPL tasks, the power is that you can set up dynamic graphs as you discover it. And it's a lot of times it's like a one-time deal. So take an example of I'm trying to compile multiple projects. And the projects can have dependencies with other projects. But you don't know the structure until you start getting to that project. You cannot set up a data flow there. You can use PPL tasks there. So that is the slight distinction. So.
Questions?
There's a question.
Twitter.
Yeah, there's a question on Twitter. Anything new related to C++ for kernel mode drivers in the upcoming version of the compiler?
Essentially, no. So there is a change with VS11 in that we generate code and assume that your PC supports SSE instructions. So they came out around about 2001, okay? So most PCs around here currently do support SSE. However, in kernel mode, as you probably know, there is no automatic save of all the SSE registers. Okay, so when in kernel mode, implicitly you are operating under the architecture of IE32. In other words, you're using only scalar registers, and if you do any floating point in your kernel mode device driver, which I guess would be unusual, you are using the x87 FP stack. So we've not changed anything, except I think in the last week or two there's been discussion to actually just inject an extra warning that if we detect one module has been compiled in kernel mode and it may link with another that has not specified the architecture as IE32, you get a warning that things may go awry when you run that driver. Apart from that, I can't remember any other features that we've done during this release for kernel mode.
I think you should answer that question. It's easy.
Oh, another question. Is there a way to use autovectorization in C++ of Visual Studio 2010? No.
All right. Questions? Good.
I think this one was done.
A bit of a change of theme. So I'm thinking about opportunities to use the trackpad, given that you guys have this rich multi-touch interface. And I'd imagine that you can do things, for instance, like swipe to the edge of the trackpad and pull up the charms bar instead of dragging my mouse all the way over there. Are there people out there in Synaptics and in Windows that are thinking about how to make that experience in the trackpad more, I don't know, in keeping with multi-touch gestures?
We probably don't. Like, talk to us offline and we'll try to get you an answer. I think we're far from that expertise to even, you know, venture into a guess.
Fair enough.
So,
do we have some benchmarking tools for metro style based applications? Like in the morning session in the general app, there were some FPS and some benchmarking parameters were coming. So is there any kind of tool available with VS 11 or something?
I think the general app was using information from DirectX. I think there are certain APIs. I don't know, Chaz may know more, but I don't think the general app was doing anything specific other than to get information from DirectX. Of course, I mean, from a profiling point of view, the Express Queue has a profiler. So, not exactly to answer your question, but the profiler is part of the Express Queue. So, when you start writing Metro app with Express, you automatically get some of the performance tools.
Yeah, those are really nice now that they're integrated into the IDE better. The other thing that we've got is at least a couple of our samples actually attempt to measure performance. There's a the issue is that you have to be careful when you're just measuring frame rate. The issue is that on the Metro environment, frame rate is always locked to the monitor. You can't set up a VSync policy that is not in sync with the monitor refresh rate. So if you measure refresh rate, you'll either always get 60 frames a second or 30 frames a second if you're missing every one, something like that. So you need to be very careful when you measure. And so what we do in a lot of cases is we set a timer, and then we measure effectively the percent of the CPU utilization during the 16 millisecond window for each frame that is actually consumed versus idle. And that becomes your performance quality metric for these new classes of applications.
One other thing we have that's specific to XAML apps, it's not generally extensible and there's no support for logging, but if you're interested in just your instantaneous frame rate on both of the XAML threads as well as some other resource information, you can set one of the debug settings in any XAML app, enable frame rate counter, and it'll actually put an overlay up in the top corner of your screen that gives you some performance information just in a sort of frame-by-frame fashion, and it has frame rate counters and stuff like that. And it doesn't necessarily allow you to log it or anything, but you can at least look at it as you're running and see what your frame rate and some other metrics are.
Yeah, I want to do the store offline.
You want to do it? I think that was online.
I know, but it's...
Kevin Goldsmith? Is he here?
Just talk to me after.
Yep. He had a question about the store and hardware requirements, and it's pretty long. So if you want to talk to Chaz afterwards, that should be fine.
Any questions?
If you're in the room, feel free, because we're trying to get through all the Twitter stream. You're going to go downstairs. There'll be drinks. You can grab them on the hallway on the way down if you need to. So if you're in the room, you know, and you don't tweet them, that way we'll know which ones to tackle. We want to make sure that the online people get all their questions answered. All right.